Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a little bonus podcast for you lovely people. It's unnumbered because I'm sneaking out as a secret. But basically, I mean, this might sound like it's an advert, and it kind of is. I've been really pleased with how things have gone with the exclusive content I've been recording for Patreon. So I wanted, as it's been going a few months, I wanted to give you guys a little peek behind the curtain, essentially. So the two things we do over at Patreon is the first Monday of the month is Poem of the Month, and the third Monday of the month is Distraction Pieces, a Rewind. So I thought I'd give you the ones of them from February to have a listen to here and see if you think it's worth $1 a month. As said, it's a tiny amount. The hope is that you sign up. You can pay more, but the minimum is $1 a month. If you see more value, you're welcome to chuck more in. But the thought is you sign up and then you'll forget about that money coming out of your account. It's such a small amount, it's not going to have an impact. I wouldn't want you to be putting yourself in any financial risk for Patreon. So that's why I made it $1 a month. As said, you can pay more. And I also post preview photos there from every issue. Or every time I record a podcast, sorry. I do Q&As on there every now and then, all sorts of good fun stuff. So, yeah, patreon.com/scroobiouspip is where you can do all that. But I'll do this in two parts. I'll introduce the poem of the month first. And I won't introduce it too much because within the poem of the month, I introduce it. So I didn't want to edit any of that out. I wanted to just give you this for free, to let you know. I'm only doing this once, by the way. I'm not going to be sneaking them out free every month or whatever. I just thought, as we're now in, what are we in, April? Yeah, I thought I'd give you February's audio content and see if you fancy a bit more. So this is the first of the Patreon Poem of the Month. Hello, this is my poem of the month on Patreon. What I'm doing with this, I don't know if I'd explain it every time, but what I'm doing is I'm going through old hard drives and finding just poems of mine. And some of them, I'm sure I'll get to ones that turned into either pieces that you might know or are stuff that ended up on albums. But in general, I'm going to go through and see what I can find and just read it out. And I've just opened it up before I started recording this first one. And it's weird because the first one is from 2005. I don't really have any great memory of writing it. There's two here that I don't particularly remember writing. So I'm going to start with this one. This is so far the oldest one I found on this hard drive. It doesn't mean it's the first piece I wrote. I'm sure I wrote other pieces. Yeah, it's just, but the information I'll give you is because you can get the information of the document. So this was created Sunday the 24th of July 2005 at 3:43 apparently, and it's called The Pretty Pretentious Name of The Revolution Will Not Be Categorized. Obviously, I was a Gil Scott Heron fan from the start. This, again, these might not be the best performances. I don't remember writing this, so I don't remember how it's meant to be written or where. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see how it goes. Yeah, I'm here, but I ain't here to steal the show. Just here to tell a tale that happened many years ago. I stepped out into this weird world rhyming, with no preconceived ideas of what I'd be finding. Armed with just my mind, etiquette and good timing. Just getting on while my mind and my heart were aligning. Walking slowly through scene after scene, just observing. Making no judgments, just observing and learning. I went from towns to deserts with words replaced by a look. Exploring each new character like a Kerouac book. Walking alone in the world, in which I felt somewhat misplaced, with very little more than just a suit in my case. I found a point where the roads ended and turned into sand, put my suitcase on the floor and slowly unclasped my hand, and then I stopped. In response to the voices in my head, I spoke with intent to the empty space ahead. You think actions speak louder than words, then listen close, as these words quietly devour you like I'm Pac-Man and your ghosts. I took a meter ruler out, in the right hand of my outstretched arm, and held it up to the horizon to show the edges curving. The simplest of methods to demonstrate the earth isn't flat, it's round. This ball of mud had mankind fooled for years before they even questioned it. I stared at the horizon with squinted eyes and could see the point where the skyline mixed with the ether. I looked down and saw an object I'd never seen before, with six equal sides ahead of me on the floor. As I approached it, I realized something wicked and twisted. We lived so far outside the box, we never knew it existed. And that's that. That's not that bad. It's pretty pretentious. I like that. So you'll be hearing this. I'm recording this at the end of the year, but you'll be hearing this in 2019. So 14 years ago, I was dispelling flat earthers before they'd become a thing again. So that's good. That basically, I kind of half remember. That's all. That was just all about the coming up with a whole story around the idea of thinking so far outside the box we didn't know it existed. So I've written this whole journey into a desert, and then I'm finding the box, and already the whole think outside the box. Well, I thought so far outside the box, I didn't know it existed. It's pretty crap. But there you go. That was my poem of the month. The Revolution Will Not Be Categorized, by Scroobius Pip, July 24th, 2005, at 3:43 p.m. See you later. So there we go. I mean, that, in, you know, in retrospect, might actually make you decide you definitely don't want to join my Patreon, because what an average poem. But it's fun to go over these things, and it's been really good fun. A few of the ones I've got to so far on the recording front are ones that turned into songs or poems that were on my albums and stuff like that. And there's going to be more of them the deeper we go, I guess, or the further we go. So yeah, that's good fun, and I hope you enjoyed that. Now I'm going to skim into this. The Distraction Pieces Rewind episodes, I look over five previous podcasts and give you a bit of behind the scenes. On this first one, I give a bit of behind the scenes on how I started doing a podcast, for example. So yeah, that's essentially what I start at number one. I'm working my way through five at a time, until we're up to date, I guess, and then I'll have to stop doing them. But can I ever get up to date? Is it one of them things where it's always, if I've started far enough in the past, then as long as I'm doing one a week, it should take like 10 years or something. I don't know. I'm not good at the maths thing. Anyway, this is the first ever patreon.com/ScroobiusPip Distraction Pieces Rewind. Again, I introduce it in the thing, so why am I doing it here? Let's just go. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the first ever Distraction Pieces Rewind, just from my Patreon gang. Hope you're all well. I don't know how long these are going to be or what they're going to be like. I'm not scripting them or planning them. I'm just going into them and seeing what I can share. Basically, I'm going to be talking about five episodes at a time, starting at number one and working my way up and through. So yeah, there's not going to be any music or anything. I'm just recording into a mic and uploading straight for you guys, so no one else is hearing this. There's no production team or uploading or anything like that, team. So the first five episodes were Russell Brand, Zane Lowe, Alan Moore, DJ Yoda, and Sage Francis. But I guess before I talk about any of them, I should tell you a bit about how the podcast kind of came about. So before I started the podcast, I had a radio show on XFM called The Beatdown. And I had my arm twisted into making that show. I think it was in between albums with Dan Lesac I started it. And then I'd record it on the road and send it off to my amazing producer, Dan Rido, when I was on tour and stuff like that. And The Beatdown was a hip-hop and spoken word show. And we'd have guests on every now and then. I had the Young Fathers on. I had Run the Jewels on before they were, both of them before they were kind of huge. I had Childish Gambino on, Kate Tempest, tons of good people. And they're available on Mixcloud, I think, still. I think there's a Mixcloud somewhere that has all the Beatdown shows. So hunt that down if you fancy that. Little tip. But, I fell in love with it unexpectedly, and it went kind of well. I got nominated for some Sony Awards, which are like the big radio awards. And at that point, I think XFM hadn't won one for a year or two. And the Beatdown won two, which was kind of crazy. We got a gold and a silver in different categories. So that was great. But it kind of felt that, I don't know, I was, at that point, I had, for a long time, been really into podcasts. So it kind of felt that I was not falling out of love with radio. I'd fallen in love with radio by doing radio. But it just felt that, you know, I was listening to a lot of podcasts, and I felt, as I think my schedule was getting busier as well, and I felt it's similar to my touring life and music career, I'd rather stop at a high, at a peak, when it was still, the quality was really high. I'd rather stop and quit while we're ahead than keep going. So I spoke to XFM. I think as well, I kind of, after the awards and that, I kind of said, is there any more budget? Because I was earning very little. Obviously, it's a show that was on at midnight, but it's commercial radio. It's a big place. It's part of Global. They're huge. So I kind of inquired if there was any more money in it, because other things were taking my priority, and to give the time I wanted to, I couldn't justify giving the time I wanted to the radio show with the amount I was earning, if that makes sense. But there was never any big negotiations or arguments or walkouts. I spoke to Chris, who'd brought me in. I said, look, I'm going to take a bit of time off, but is there any money in the kitty? And he kind of asked, he ran it up the ladder and said, no, not really, which was fine. And I inquired at the time about podcasts, because it's what I was kind of into. And in that kind of off period, I was in LA, and I went on Joe Rogan's podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience. And I can't remember if it was on air or off air. He kind of said to me, so why do you do your show on someone else's platform? And I was like, well, you know, it's commercial radio. And he was like, but just do it for yourself. And that obviously got me thinking. So I decided I wanted to do a podcast, and I wanted to record a load before I launched. So the first four were all recorded before I released any. I didn't really know what I was doing. I had a Warren Borg at the time, Wargie of War and Peace fame. He was producing it for me, in that I'd send him the files and he'd piece it all together. But I was going out on my own and recording it on my own. I'd been given advice on what kit to buy from Dan Lesac, and I'd got my kit. And I went out and started recording them. And I'm not going to do them, from now on, they're going to be in order. But I'm not going to do these in order, because they weren't recorded in order. Because the second ever episode was with Zane Lowe. That was the first episode ever recorded. And I went up to Zane's house, and Zane had always supported me and Dan Lesac and my solo stuff. He's the one that really pushed Introduction on the day of release. I did an interview on Radio 1 on the day of release. And yeah, he's always been amazing and a dear friend. And he produced a song on the Distraction Pieces album. So He was top of my list of guests. And I also knew that some people had a bad impression of him that wasn't right. The dude's a legend. He's really into his music. And he's gone to prove that with all the stuff he's doing over at Beats and on iTunes and stuff like that. But so I went to Zane's and he was still at Radio 1, I think, then, or maybe he'd just left. And he was looking at options. I think it was just before he left, but we kind of talked maybe off air that he was wondering what the next step was, because a lot of people were being moved about at Radio 1. And we recorded in his living room, and we had a good long chat. It was a really enjoyable one. I think he accused me of being a bit worthy, which I didn't like, but I took on the chin because some of my lyrics are a bit preachy and that, but you know, it was fine. But yeah, I had an amazing chat, and I spoke to Zane about how he was one of the influencers on me doing a podcast, because he did, on Radio 1, he did these long interviews, these hour-long interviews with people like Kanye and Jay-Z and all sorts of other people. And they were amazing. And they weren't these, again, you've got to bear in mind at this point, particularly in the UK, podcasts weren't a big thing. It was all going down the avenue of small, bite-sized interviews, a tiny little, a few words on the news, on the radio about your new record or whatever, but all bite-sized and all kind of lively. And Zane was someone who had the power at the time to go, no, I want to dedicate an hour to an artist, you know, and really talk to them and get into it and not feel, oh, we need to play another song now or do this now or anything like that. So, yeah, it was a big influence. But then the drive home from Zane's, I drove. The drive home was my most uncomfortable drive ever, because I didn't know if it had recorded or not. I'd not done one of these before. And yeah, it was fucking scary. I think I took my laptop with me, and when I got to my car, I took the memory card out and put it in my laptop, and it showed up as blank. And that scared the hell out of me, because Zane had just been kind enough to give me 90 minutes of his time in his house, no less. And now I'm driving home and I'm thinking it's blank, and it was horrible. And I got home and it was still blank. But then when I put it in the mixing desk thing that I've got, so my recording setup, I won't bore you with this too much, but it's a little standalone kind of mixing desk that has its own, you put the memory card in it. I don't have to plug it into a computer or rely on anything else. It's just there. And when I put the memory card in, I could then see that the audio was there. But when I put the memory card in my laptop, it wasn't there. So that was a bit scary. And I hit up whoever makes it. And they explained I needed to get a program to convert it. So to this day, after I do a podcast, I plug my mixing desk into my computer through a cable that, and my bloody USB ports struggle, so it disconnects all the time. But it takes around 20 minutes to half an hour to convert the files, or to get the files off of the mixing desk onto my laptop. And then I send them to Buddy and blah, blah, blah. But at that point, I didn't know that. So I'd found this out because I was in a panic. I was ringing them and saying, how do I retrieve data? Because I can see it's on there, but it's gone. So is it a data retrieval thing? As I said, in the end, I figured it out. It all worked. I downloaded the right thing. And we were off to the races. But yeah, I remember clearly that drive home being absolutely horrific because of fear of the first person who'd given me their time. And I want to look like a professional, right? You don't want to be going, oh, by the way, that didn't work. Can we talk for another hour? That's horrible. So yeah, I fixed it. And then I went to, who was next? I think I recorded Alan Moore next. So I went to chat to Alan Moore, and that was exciting because the way I lined it up, I got Alan's daughter to ask him, or she was going to ask him, but I think she forgot or something. I can't remember what happened there, because Alan's daughter, as I'll talk about in a future episode with Mark Miller, has got a tattoo of some of my lyrics on her. So yeah, I ended up getting Robin Ince to talk to Alan, because he was talking to him that at the weekend or something, because Alan hasn't got, he doesn't do email, he's not got a smartphone, he's got a landline and that's it. So Robin spoke to him and asked if it was okay for me to ring him. And I'd done a couple of gigs with Alan. He knew I was a big fan of his. He'd signed a copy of The Watchmen for me, which was amazing because that's my favourite comic, and he doesn't really sign them because of all the fallout. But yeah, it meant the world. So he knew I was a fan, and he, I think, was a fan of what he'd seen of me. I know he knew his daughter was a fan of my lyrics, so I know that she'd played him a few things as well. So yeah, I got the green light to ring him, and I was told, ring him at 6. He will have just had his bath, because on that particular night, I think it was on a Sunday, it was like, he has a bath at this time, and he's normally out by this time. And I was so nervous. It was like, I'm old, so a lot of you won't know this, but in my day, you used to have to ring a girl if you wanted to ask a girl out, and you had to ring her on a landline, and you had to like potentially ask her dad if she's in and have a chat with her dad first and stuff like that. And it's one of the reasons I didn't really have any girlfriends until well into my college years. So none through school years, well into my college years, because that's, number one, that's scary anyway. But number two, I've got a stutter, man. I don't want to be ringing someone and talking to their dad on the phone. That's terrifying. So yeah, I had to ring Alan Moore, and the Alan Moore, the creator of The Watchmen, and so many other amazing things. So I rung him, and we had a lovely chat, and he agreed to it, and we set a date, and he gave me his address. And yeah, I drove down there and sat in Alan Moore's living room. And before we started, he rolled the biggest joint I've ever seen in my life and proceeded to smoke it throughout. And yeah, it was amazing. I came away from that one just beaming. All the drive home from that, I'd calmed down. I knew how to get things off the hard drive. I was just beaming because I'm a big fan of Alan Moore. And I knew that, you know, I kind of considered him a friend. I knew he knew who I was and vice versa. But this was the first time we'd sat down for an extended amount of time. And we really, if you've not heard that episode, have a listen, because we connected on a lot of things, and he opened my eyes to a lot of things. He talks about how the reason he got into comic books was because they had no boundaries. And particularly at that point, film, TV, anything else, had boundaries. Comic books, the only limitation was your imagination. And that was exciting. And he does a big speech at the end about magic, because he's a big believer in magic and he feels it's an important force in the world. And that might sound like kind of hippie mumbo jumbo, but it's amazing. I'm one of the most skeptical guys going, and I was sat there just wide-eyed and open mouth as he professed the wonders and powers of magic. It was amazing. And he did a spoken word piece, which was really special. Yeah, he did. Is it Old Gangsters Never Die? He did a spoken word piece that he used to perform. He wrote in like the 70s, I think, and used to perform it. And he hadn't performed it anywhere in years, and he still had it in his memory. And he kind of, as he started performing it, he rocked in his chair a little, and it became a bit of a performance, and he tapped his foot. And again, I'm sitting there. You've got to just think of me at that point. This podcast isn't even a thing yet. It's not out. No one knows about it. I've not told anyone. Again, I felt if I was going to do this, I needed to do it good and make it look professional. So I wanted artwork. I wanted everything all sorted. So when I announced it, I was saying, here's the guests that are coming. Here's what it is. Bang. And yeah, I'm sitting in Alan Moore's living room as he's performing a poem to just me, but performing it as if he's performing it to a stadium. It's amazing. So yeah, so that was really cool and really enjoyable. I touched on the artwork there. The photo was done by Lisa Lydon, who I've worked with a load of times over the years. She's done tons of my photography. I think she's great. She's based in Colchester or Chelmsford? In Colchester. Yeah, and we kind of came up with the idea. I wanted it to be striking, and the thing that I'm holding is a boom mic type thing. So I'm pointing a mic to my head, and then the name distraction piece is exploding out the side. I kind of had that visual in mind, and then Mr. Heggie drew it far better than I could have imagined. I was thinking all kind of jagged, like a lot of Russian, like 80s or earlier, actually, a Russian art. But he did it amazingly, and yeah, it looks great. So that's how that came about. And then the next I recorded, I think, no, the next I recorded was a DJ, a Yoda. And that was exciting because I recorded that back at XFM. So if you had any doubt that when I just said that there was no bad blood or issues, they were lovely. Chris in particular and Dan Rido said, look, we're parting ways, but you've been great. We love you. If you ever want to use our studios, if we've got an empty one at the time, then you can slip in and record. And the first time I used that was for DJ Yoda. And he came in and we had a good old chat. I love Yoda. He's someone I've worked with previously. He's someone that feels like, despite the fact I went to see him play when I was growing up, he's someone that feels like my mates while I was growing up, if that makes sense. It's a weird one, but I love him dearly. And after we recorded it, he took me to, not Patty and Bun. No, that was, I was going to get that wrong there. There's a place, Buns is in the title, because Patty and Bun is a burger place near Liverpool Street. There's a place near, it's in Covent Garden, off Seven Dials. And I can't remember what it's called, but it was really good. He took me there. He was the first person to take me there. And you go in and it's, I think it's a Japanese place. And they have these steamed buns and just tons of amazingly cooked meat, essentially. And this is the most amazing broccoli as well. And you order all this stuff and you kind of build your own buns as you go. What's it called? Flesh and Buns. There you go. There's probably some people listening who were like screaming that into their computer or headphone or however you're listening. Flesh and Buns. So he took me there for food, and it kind of became a rule that any time that me and Yoda had any work to do or any reason to meet up, we had to go for food, because he's a foodie. He knows his stuff. He knows the good places. And we went there, and you know what? I enjoyed the podcast, but the podcast was work. It was talking about hip-hop and all the stuff I loved about his career. The meal we had afterwards was talking about life, and that sounds so stupid and dramatic, but yeah, I felt I got to know Yoda in a different way then. That might have influenced a future podcast, you know, the conversation that we had after, rather than the one that we had there, which was kind of music, this and that. You'll see quite quickly a lot of the podcasts as we go on to future episodes of this Distraction Pieces Rewind. You'll see that they often become less about career and more about just life. It varies depending on who the person is and how well I know them, things like that, how open they want to be. But yeah, that's kind of, yeah, just thinking about it now, I think potentially that conversation afterwards was an eye-opener, because it, yeah, we sat down and we chatted. I guess it's because we'd already had the industry conversation that we would normally have if we met up. We'd meet up and we'd talk about the gigs he'd done and the stuff and all that kind of thing, and what he was working on and who he'd, what crazy rap act he'd met, and we'd be all excited. And this was just, no, it's like, we've done that, so now let's just talk, how's life? How's the family? How's the kids? And yeah, it was amazing. I loved it. So, next up, recording-wise, was the episode that became the first episode, which was a Russell Brand. So I recorded the Russell episode last of the four that I recorded before I launched. So when I launched, I went a Russell, Zane, Alan Moore, DJ Yoda. And they're the four that I announced ahead of launch. It was October 15th was Russell Brand, October 22nd was Zane Lowe, October 29th was Alan Moore, and October 5th was DJ Yoda. So I went and recorded with Russell, and Russell was someone that, it was weird. I was in LA about a year before this, or a little while before this at least, and I was staying with my mate Kelly, and I went on a night out with Paloma Faith, because I fucking adore Paloma. I love the girl. I've known her for years. And I was in LA and she was in LA. And I was like, look, I'm about, what's going on? And she was like, I'm going to this weird private party thing. Oh, no, the private party was the next day. The night, this was the first night. I hung out with her the next night as well, I think. Or maybe it was after, I can't remember. But she was saying, I'm going to see a Russell Brand doing a work in progress stand-up show. And do you want to come along? So me and Paloma went to that. And it was great. It was hilarious. It was a real work in progress. It was real start on some ideas, ask the audience some questions, see where it goes. And when we left, she tweeted Russell, I think, saying, oi, Russell, I'm here. Are you about? Or me and Scroobius are here. Do you want to come and hang out? And Russell tweeted her saying, I want to meet Scroobius Pip. I've never met him before. Which was hilarious to us because Paloma, I assume, knows Russell better, and it felt quite rude to that he wanted to hang out with me because she's far more famous and successful. But, you know, I'm a Stamford boy. He's a Grays boy. We've both got that Essex thing. He's from a few miles up the road. I don't think we got to hang out that night from memory, but, you know, it meant that we exchanged some emails back and forth. At one point while I was out there, I was going to go to do yoga with Russell one morning. I think I blew that out. And we missed each other on that trip. But a little while later, I went to see him. Like, we kept in touch, and I went to see him at the Soho Theatre. No, yeah, the Soho Theatre, not the Leicester Square Theatre. So, yeah, I went to see him there, and he was amazing, far better. It was a finished show of the work in progress I'd seen. I went again with my mate Kelly Marcel, who I'd stayed with in LA, weirdly. She was back in the country, so I was returning the hangout favours and revelling in catching up with one of my favourite people and future podcast guest. So, yeah, we went and saw Russell, and then he came out afterwards and came to say hello. And the first time we met, he stood really close to my face and was really intense in a friendly way, but spoke really fast and told me how beautiful my eyes were, which was lovely. But again, I don't know if it was a... It felt like, you know, when... Or if you've grown up in Essex, sometimes your mates will try and forgive the term, try and gay each other out. Like, as straight people, but comfortable with all sexualities, you'll try and make your mate uncomfortable by being a bit too huggy, a bit too, you know, see where they stop. I've never lost that game because I'm dead comfortable. I love... Like my mate Andy gives the best cuddles in the world. And I ain't had one in ages. And me and my mate Tom and Stu, we can really dance sexy together. Like, I can grind on Tom like no one else. So yeah, it felt, I wondered a little bit as if it was a kind of a test because he was being really close up and really intense and really, as said, just complimentary. But I'm comfortable with these things. I'm all right. And I was just like, all right, cool. That was a great show. I'm a big fan, blah, 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 Essex, all back and forth. And weirdly, as a detour here, after that, me and Kelly were standing outside, or maybe in an interval or something, because I think Kelly was smoking at that point. And we were standing outside, and I nudged her and go, oh my God, Stephen Graham's coming up the street, because I'm a big fan of Stephen Graham. And he's coming up, and I try not to stare at him, and he walks past. And then he looks around and comes back. And comes up to me and goes, mate, I just want to say, I saw you on Soccer AM. And me and my wife got your record and we love it. It's a nice one. And I then blurted just, I love doing This Is England. I love this the final speech that at the end of the series that Al Capone does in Boardwalk Empire, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, that's the first time I met Stevie. And he then has obviously gone on to be a dear friend, a double podcast appearer. But yeah, anyway, that's a detour. So I go around Russell's, and as you'll see from the Polaroid, he comes and greets me in a towel. I kind of chill for a bit. I set up. He had an assistant or someone was helping out, because I was also, that's right, I was going on the Trues as well that day. So he was doing my podcast and then we were doing the Trues, or maybe we did the Trues first. So he had some people there to kind of, he was getting ready and they let me in. And then he came down and did the whole podcast in a towel. If you look at the Polaroid, he's got the towel over his head and looks Jesus-like or Mary-like. And we had a good old chat, and it was lovely. And it's really pleasing to look back on, because at that point I talked to him a bit about MMA and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And I can't remember if it's on the podcast or not, but specifically Joe Rogan. And in the years that have passed, he's been on Joe Rogan several times. He'd said that he was intimidated and felt it was all too macho, but then I told him it was amazing. So he's gone on Joe Rogan a couple of times. He started to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And it's not because of my influence, but I love that we had those conversations before they were things that he got into, because I felt that they were things he would enjoy. And he's been one of the best guests on the Joe Rogan Experience ever. So, yeah, I stand by that. So, yeah, it was really nice. I think I've said a few times, for about 20 minutes, he was in full Russell mode, and he had a new book out and would like read from his book and stuff like that. But that's the one I give as an example all the time of the beauty of podcasting, because you can't maintain that. So after a certain amount of time, he let his guard down and he relaxed. And it also is an example of the fact that I've started doing podcasts because I believe in the format of long-form interviews. And there's numerous bits in that podcast that I could have released as sound bites and sent places or whatever and got a lot of hype, but I didn't, because I don't believe in the taking things out of context. But one of the examples of this was in months and months later, Russell backtracked on what he'd said about don't vote. He'd previously talked about not voting. That was before the podcast. And then he backtracked. And supposedly, I remember it was in the Sun or someone was up in arms going, Russell Brand backtracks on not voting, but too late because it's after the registering to vote and all this kind of thing. And I read that and I was like, nah, he said that on my podcast. He said on the podcast, he admitted his mistakes. It's what I love about Russell. You can love or hate him, but he's always trying to learn and improve, and he will be so passionate about his beliefs, but if he finds out they're wrong or learns otherwise, he'll switch things up. And that was the case there. He kind of said on the podcast, he's like, yeah, you know what? I think I had a strong belief, but I hadn't fully researched it and gone through the options. And on the podcast, we talk about different options of democracy. And yeah, it's fascinating. And he says on there, yeah, I was being reactionary. That I was being poked and I was poking back. And yeah, it turned into a big thing. But yeah, he said that in the podcast. So all the kind of news stories of him backtracking after it was too late to register. No, he'd backtrack before, you just weren't listening. So yeah, that was a great one. And I love Russell dearly. Yeah, he's the best. He then went on, he later went on to have B. Dolan on the Trues. I put them together and hooked that up, and it was amazing. But speaking of B. Dolan, I met B. Dolan through a certain man called Sage Francis, who is episode number 5. And Sage has become one of the most requested guests, even though he was the 5th guest. I have that a lot. That'll come up in a few different early ones. Sarah Pascoe's another early one that I get requests all the time. And I'm like, I've had them on. You just need to go back into the back catalogue. And I've had Sage back recently. But yeah, anyway. So Sage was on the top of my list because Sage is one of my biggest influences as a musician, as a writer, as a human. I think he's an amazing man. I'm lucky enough to call him a friend now. And this was, at that point, this was 2014. Sage was touring Copper Gone. And I had the amazing opportunity to release the Copper Gone album on Speech Development Records. And because of that, as soon as he was over touring, I said, look, I'm coming on the tour and running a merch stall. That's what I'm there to do. I jumped up a few times and rapped with one of my idols. Of course I did. We've got songs together and I think he's amazing. I wrote a special verse to go with one of his songs. So yeah, but on this particular night, we were in Cardiff and we were staying at the weirdest little hotel /B&B. All the hotels, I think, his guy had booked, or the tour manager, not the tour manager, the booking agent, I think, had booked. And I think they'd agreed to pay for my hotel. And I said, I'll run the merch, I'll drive everywhere, I'll do all of this. So I think that was the case anyway. I think I might have booked a few of my own hotels separately. But in this instance anyway, we were staying in the same hotel. But it was barely a hotel. And this woman who ran it was really odd. It was like, you're not allowed in after 10 or something. It's like, well, we've got a gig. We're going to be in after 10. And it was all, we had to argue all sorts of stuff. But on all these things, I don't like to put pressure on people. I know how it is on tour and how you might want to just crash out afterwards. But sure enough, Sage decided he was up for doing a podcast. I think it was after the gig. It'll say in the episode. It might have been before the gig. I think it was after the gig. But we recorded it in my hotel room. And that in my hotel room was just a bed. So I think I might have had a chair, actually. But Sage was definitely laying on the bed and I was on a chair. Which, weirdly, is recreated when, at the end of last year, I had Sage Francis and B. Dolan on. I went and caught them on tour in Cardiff. And we sat in a hotel room. I think Sage had a seat and Dolan was on the bed that time. And we, yeah, it was a weird a recreation. But again, this was an amazing one because I've learnt a lot from Sage from a distance and then personally. So to get to chat to him in the podcast about a lot of it was amazing because, as said, he's someone that I went to see Sage, 2002 maybe, at Plastic People, where he was standing on top of a chair. There was no stage. He's standing on a chair with a microphone and doing this gig. And he absolutely smashed it. He stole the show. It was amazing. And yeah, I'd gone to see him in New York. I'd watched him for a long time. And so he felt like a key person I had to have on early. And I kind of regret having him on early because he also deserves a bigger platform. So him being one of the early people, it means he's someone that people now go, oh, you should have Sage on. It's like, yeah, I've had him on. You've just not listened. But yeah, it was a fantastic chat. It's weird because, again, the way these podcasts work is they make you have conversations that you maybe wouldn't have normally had. So that was 100% the case here. We kind of talked about stuff we'd not talked about before. He got to school me some more and educate me on the industry. And I got to go, look, I'm a podcast guy as well now. At that point, it was a podcast guy as well. At that point, I was still touring, right? I think it was just before mine and Dan's last. No, it was after our last album had come out. So that was the last tour I think I performed on. No, the speech development tour was straight after that. That's right. And we'll get to that potentially in the next one. Is B. Dolan in the next one? Yes, he is. In the next episode, we'll get to that. So at this point, I'd done my last ever gig, me and Dan Lesac, at Bestival, in front of 10,000 people, all singing along. It was amazing. And I had tentatively hung up my gloves, my microphone, my trucker cap. But on this Sage tour, I jumped up and did some stuff in Sage's set. And then straight after the Sage tour was in October, ended in November. The speech development tour was, I think, November into December. And the speech development tour was B. Dolan headlining, War and Peace supporting, and me DJing in between sets, occasionally doing a bit of spoken word to start things off, introducing each act, jumping up with War and... No, I didn't jump up with War and Peace, I don't think. I jumped up with Dolan. But yeah, that's how that tour worked, and that's how these all linked together. So I'll leave it there for now. And in next month's episode, we're going to be going over Simon Singh, who I think is one of the most underrated guests I've had on, or overlooked guests. Warren Ellis, who is an absolute idol of mine. Jodie-Anne Bickley, which was a hugely emotional one. B. Dolan. And Open Mike Eagle, who's also gets a lot of requests because he was in the early few. So yeah, I'll talk to you all about them. Two of them were recorded at XFM, just so you know. And three were recorded elsewhere. I don't know where did I record the Warren Ellis one? I think that might have been XFM as well, you know. I think it was. Well, this is a fascinating end to the conversation, isn't it? There we go. That's been the first ever Distraction Pieces Rewind. I hope you've enjoyed it. As you will know, are we doing poem of the month on the first Monday, distraction pieces rewind on the third Monday of every month. Hopefully it's worth your $1. I don't know. I plan to do these until the very end of the collection, but who knows? Oh God, the one after this, or the one, not next week's, next month's one will be great, but the month after that, we've got Simon Pegg, Killer Mike, FullFact.org, Josie Long, and Stuart Lee. How good's that going to be? And then the one after that is Riz Ahmed, Kate Tempest, Rufus Hound, Nick Frost, and Mike Skinner. God, I've had some good guests. And the one after that, I've had the one that I think was the worst guest I've had. So we will get to that later. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you for being a Patreon. As I said, I started the Patreon. I wasn't going to give anything. It was just support if you want to. But I've really enjoyed you guys. So that's why I started doing these. Hope you enjoy them as a little bonus. If you want to spread the word, that would be cool. Because the more the merrier, you know. Whilst I like that it's a little closed group, equally, last month I released the Drunkcast Hangover. The Drunkcast itself, each episode had 20 to 30,000 listens. Imagine if all 20 to 30,000 of them subscribed at $1 a month. That'd be $20,000 to $30,000 a month. And it'd all go into the business and producing stuff and things like that. But that'd be pretty good, wouldn't it? And it's only $1 a month to any individual. That's the bit that makes it exciting and fun, you know. I'm not asking for anyone to pay anything extortionate. But you can pay more. If you joined at $1 a month and you decided that these distraction pieces, rewind podcasts and the poem a month mean it's worth more than $1 a month to you, and you can afford it, that's the key bit, it's within your means. If that's the case, then go on, man. Go in. Go up to $2 a month. Go up to $3 a month. Go up to however many dollars a month you feel is fair. But no pressure, and don't reach outside of your financial means, because that is a dumb move. This has been the Distraction Pieces Rewind. Ta-ta.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
So there we go. I wanted to give you those bits for free. And if you like them, then you can have them for, you know, $1 a month. If you see there's value in that. I really enjoyed doing them. And the people over there seem to enjoy listening to them. So, yeah, hopefully that will make you think. Hopefully I'll wake up today and look on Patreon and go, wow, there's hundreds of new Patreons. But I might not. But it's, you know, the reason I set it up, as I said, is to have an extra way to fund things. So if I've got a guest that I need to travel to and stay in a hotel, or if I've got a guest that I need to put up in a hotel, I will be able to do that and not have to think twice about it and check my bank and see if it's a viable cost. Equally, if I need to book some studio time somewhere, all these kind of things. So, yeah, it's good fun. Head over to patreon.com/ScroobiusPip, or just go to Patreon and I'm sure you can just search for Scroobius Pip and it will come up. I will see you all next week. Who have I got next week? I'll tell you guys. I forgot to tell them on Wednesday. Oh my God. Next week is the one that has now had the biggest reaction when I do my Patreon preview. It's Ron Perlman. Yeah, I know. That's exciting, isn't it? Yeah. So that'll be next week. That is something to very much look forward to. I will see you all then. Ta-ta!
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA.
TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.